Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So this Sunday, whatever else it might be in our area, is Shredfest NYC, a five-borough event that aims to prevent New Yorkers from throwing your identity in the garbage. My first guest today, Frank Abagnale, knows a thing or two about stealing people's identities, since that's exactly what he used to do for a living. Remember Leonardo DiCaprio's portrayal of Abagnale in the film Catch Me If You Can? Well, now Frank Abagnale is lending his nefarious former notoriety or former nefarious notoriety to helping protect others from what he used to do and the more contemporary forms of identity theft. And he's helping the city to publicize Shredfest NYC today. Frank Abagnale, thanks a lot for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, our phones are open. Help protect everyone else by sharing your identity theft horror stories or ask Frank Abagnale your questions about how to protect your own identity. 212-433-WNYC. We'll open the phones right from the beginning here. 433-9692, or post, as a couple of people have already done, one horror story, one question, already up at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Frank, what exactly is Shredfest NYC?
Well, I think it's a great thing. I'm a very big supporter of when cities go out and put on these Shredfest, where they allow people to bring all of their documents and sit there and witness them being shredded in a big truck. As you know, it's very easy to shred a few things, but a lot of us have a lot of papers that are in boxes and stored away in attics, and it would be very difficult to sit there on a shredder and try and shred all of that. This gives you the opportunity to bring it out, watch it go into the truck, look through a window in the truck, and see it all destroyed right in front of you in a matter of minutes. And it's great, and I'm very supportive of when cities go and do this, because it really helps people get rid of a lot of information that could be used by someone to steal their identity or get their credit and things of that nature.
So on Sunday, there are going to be these mobile shredding trucks at Lehman College in the Bronx, North Lot, Pelham Bay Park, the Ryan Recreational Complex, also in the Bronx, Brooklyn College, J.J. Byrne Park in Brooklyn, Highland Park in Brooklyn, Battery Park City, Columbus Circle, St. Nicholas Park across from the Thurgood Marshall Academy, all in Manhattan, also the Queens County Civil Court, Sutphin Boulevard, the Rite Aid at 50th Street and Roosevelt Avenue in Queens, and at Midland Beach Park in Staten Island. I think I got all the Shredfest NYC locations in there. And so, like, how much junk do you expect folks to show up with?
Well, actually, I hope a great deal. A lot of things that we think are worthless pieces of paper mean a great deal to somebody else who's trying to steal information. So anything like old receipts, certainly canceled checks, credit card statements, old mortgage papers, loan applications, things that have personal information about you on them, any of those things that you don't need anymore or don't need to keep records of anymore, old tax records. This gives you a unique opportunity to bring as much as you want and have them shred it right in front of you and destroy it. So anything you feel that has personal information that someone can obtain off of it from you would be a great opportunity to get rid of that.
From our comments page, a story. I once had my identity stolen and lost about $2,500 from my bank accounts due to withdrawals from local ATMs. I'm convinced, however, that this was an inside job from the bank, since just before the theft, I had requested a new debit card to be sent to me. And adds, no, I know it wasn't my brother. But is this common? Do you think that happens?
There's a lot of internal fraud. There are a lot of people who are enticed by other people outside who approach them to get information and steal information. I mean, look, you go to a gym and you register to get work out at a gym. They make a copy of your driver's license. They make a copy of your credit card. They ask for your Social Security number. There's no reason for them to have all that information, but they put it in a filing cabinet, and some minimum wage employee in there is enticed by someone to simply copy information off of it, not steal it, but put it on a postum, bring them the postum, they give them $100. So we certainly give out way too much information to people that we don't really need to give and they don't really need to have, renting a storage unit, things of that nature that don't require them to have your Social Security number and your date of birth and make a copy of your license and a copy of your credit card. We have to be a little more aggressive in not giving away all of that information to people when it's not necessary.
Anita in Manhattan. You're on WNYC with Frank Abagnale. Hello.
Yes, hi. I have a story and a question, but I don't know that he can answer the question, but I'd love someone to answer it. I'm a victim of identity theft to a major, major extent. My future was stolen. I'm 64 years old. I had someone working for me because of my disability, I'm on disability. I was working for me for 3 years. She was a professional con artist and ended up my not being able to cover up the robbery until it eventually came out.
So Anita,
she is now in jail for 18 years, and my point is that she may be in fed. I got her into federal prison for 18 years because I got a detective to work with me on this case. But the thing is that I am still a victim because I am a victim of the banks and the credit agencies. And the banks never paid me back on proven fraud
Anita, I'm going to leave it there, and I get it. And Frank, you know as well as I do that we hear these stories all the time. Once they find out, once they should be stopping it, your credit doesn't necessarily come back for years and years. Charges keep showing up. They keep harassing you. You can't get the credit rating that you had before. Is there a second level of victimization that's becoming common at the institutional level?
Absolutely. And people need to understand, I think people are under the false impression that if something happens to them, somebody forges their check, alters their check, steals their identity, that the bank assumes that liability. That's not what the law says. For example, in the case of someone who hired a person to work out in their house, an assistant or someone, a healthcare provider, and they started writing their checks and signing their name to them. If those people are not balancing their checking account every 30 days and reconciling it, the law says you have 30 days from receipt of that statement to notify the bank of any discrepancy on that statement. So if you're not doing that and 60 days later, 90 days later, 6 months later, you find out that you're missing $40,000 that person wrote checks on, the bank is not going to give you that money back. So there is a lot of responsibility on the individual, and that's why you have to be a little smarter. You have to be a little wiser. You can't rely on the police. You can't rely on the government to protect you. You have to be a little smarter and a little more knowledgeable, and that comes through education and things of that nature.
Well, Anita's story is a horrible tale. Do you have any advice for her? Because she says she's still getting victimized.
Well, obviously, you know, the bank has refused to pay her back. You know, she can sue the bank, but again, a lot will depend on what position the bank has taken or why that maybe she failure to notify them and not reconciling her bank accounts. You are always responsible for the act of your responsible employees. So if you hire someone and they commit a crime against you, you're responsible for the act of your responsible employees, not the financial institution or the credit bureau. So these are things that I think people are very naive about and totally unaware of. They just assume that someone else will take this responsibility. And she's one of 15 million victims in the United States every year, or one every 4 seconds that has this happen to them.
15 million a year?
15 million victims a year, and about one every 4 seconds in the United States.
So over a 10-year period, half the country would be victims of identity theft at
that
rate.
If you haven't been a victim, it's because nobody's picked on you yet. It is so simple to do. You know, I've been teaching at the FBI Academy now for 34 years, and in all my career on this side of the law, I have never witnessed a more simplistic crime to steal someone else's identity. And then what you do with it is solely left to the imagination of the criminal, whether they get credit in your name, buy a car in your name, get a mortgage in your name, get a job in your name, or commit a crime in your name.
Here's a question from our comments page. It says, I shred all my papers but never know if the bag of shredded paper goes with the paper recycling or in the trash bin. I do put it with the recycling and leave it for the maintenance folks to decide if that's the case.
Here's what I recommend. There are three types of shredders. They're all basically the same price. There are what we call straight shredders or ribbon shredders. They just cut paper straight. I can put a document back together in an hour that's been cut on that shredder. Then there are crisscross shredders or diamond cut shredders. In about 8 hours, I can put a document back and bring it into court as evidence, not missing a decimal. So what I prefer is what's called a micro cut shredder. at stores like Staples. You can go in and see one and try one out. If you put a credit card in a straight cut shredder, it can only slice it in four slices. So someone who opens a garbage bag and puts the four slices back has all the information, your signature, your expiration date, your security code. But if you put it in a microcut cutter, it basically takes that plastic card and turns it into plastic sand. It turns paper into confetti, so that there is absolutely no opportunity for someone to put that information back together. So I would recommend, if you're going to buy a shredder, and they're basically all about the same price, you want to make sure you ask for a microcut shredder, so that serves the purpose of what it's intended to do.
You say microcut. Someone else on the webpage is making a distinction between a crosscut or a strip shredder. It's the crosscut. Is that the same thing you're talking about?
Yeah, microcut. There are three shredders. There's a straight cutter that's called a ribbon cutter, and then there's a crisscross shredder, which is which they're referring to, and then there's the microcut shredder, which is referred to as a security shredder. They're silent. They'll do discs, credit cards, and paper, and basically they turn it into confetti. There are no strips. There are no slices.
Right.
It basically turns
right.
it into confetti.
Did you say discs? They do discs? Does that mean plastic?
You can put a CD. See, a lot of people take a CD with a lot of important information on it. They run it through a crisscross shredder. You actually can put that back together again if you're skilled enough, as we do at the FBI and so on, and be able to read that information. But if you put it in a microcut shredder, it basically is plastic sand that comes through the other side. So literally it's impossible to put that data back together again.
Frank Abagnale with us, helping to promote ShredFest NYC this Sunday, where you can bring documents to shred to locations in all five boroughs. We have a link now on our website at WNYC.org if you want to see the ShredFest NYC location near you for this Sunday. And Frank is also taking your questions, and we're taking your horror stories to help others protect identities in the New York area. Mohammed in a taxi in Manhattan. Hi, Mohammed.
Yes, hi, sir. How are we doing today?
Good. Is it your taxi? Are you the driver?
No, sir. I work for the garage.
Okay. How are you doing?
Very good. How are you?
Good. What happened to you? Or you have a question?
I have a question for the gentleman. Like, I'm logged into an identity.com. That's a website which secures your identity and, you know, which sends you email alerts if you have something, activity on your account or whatever. And, right now there's a website going on LifeLock, which assures you for a $1 million guarantee or whatever. So websites like these are pretty secured and 100% guaranteed. They will be, like your identity will be secure and you will be compensated for that, something like that.
So you want to know if these are good investments, right?
Like I'm going to say, are you pretty secured 100%?
Yes.
Like you don't have to worry about it?
Well, here's the key to that. You know, first of all, understand that if someone like LifeLock is simply freezing your credit, you give them a limit power of attorney, and then they freeze your credit so nobody can get your credit. And obviously, you can do that yourself. You don't need to pay somebody $10 a month to do that. I personally use a credit monitoring service, and basically how I pick the credit monitoring service is they have to answer two questions. One, do you monitor all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion? And two, do you notify me in real time? Because if you're going to send me a letter and tell me every quarter that there's been no activity or someone applied for a card in my name, that's too late. If you're going to mail me a letter and I don't get it for 5 days, that's too late. So when you look at a monitoring service, I use one called PrivacyGuard.com, and I've used it since 96. Basically, I pay about $12 a month. They monitor my credit, all three bureaus, and they notify me in real time by text message or email if someone is attempting to use my credit card that instant, that moment. And I don't really think you can get any better than that. There's a lot of different companies that do the same thing, but that's the two questions you want to ask them. And yes, you know, companies like Privacy Guard have been around for 20 years. They have 6 million members. They're very secure. They don't keep the data on you. They simply, when the credit bureau is hit, they notify you. They don't really keep your personal data. So to me, I've looked into these things, and that's the safest way I've found, is to monitor your credit and do it with a reputable company.
When you say they notify you at the moment that your credit card is being used, do they notify you when you're using your credit card?
No, what they do, for example, if someone were walking to Macy's and apply for credit today, instant credit, and they gave your Social Security number and your date of birth, they basically then notifies you. So, yes, if you were applying for credit, your phone would go off or your text message, or you would get notified, and you would know, of course, it's you that went in to apply for the credit. But
right.
If it wasn't you, it gives you the ability to call immediately and tell them that that's not you.
More on protecting yourself against identity theft and this Sunday's Shredfest NYC in a minute. Brian Lehrer with my guest Frank Abagnale. Also ask him about being portrayed in Catch Me If You Can. Coming up here on WNYC. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Got a video you think should be included in our weekly online video picks? Send the link to Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Put the word video in the subject line. This week's picks include an engineer's homage to his three cats. See our online video picks at WNYC.org. Click on video. We're talking about identity theft before this Sunday's Shredfest NYC, where there'll be mobile locations in all five boroughs for people to bring documents to shred. And we're using that as the jumping off point to talk about the larger issue of identity theft in our society today. Such a growing problem. We have any number of horror stories on our full board of phones. When people finish up, you can call 212-433-WNYC, or you can post your story or your question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. For my guest, Frank Abagnale, who knows a thing or two about stealing someone's identity since he used to be in this business. Maybe you remember Leonardo DiCaprio's portrayal of him in the film Catch Me If You Can. Now, your version of identity theft, if you don't mind me asking, back in the 1960s, I guess, was the old-fashioned kind. You actually posed as all different kinds of people to get ahead. You impersonated a doctor, a Harvard Law School grad, a Columbia sociology grad, if I've got this whole thing right, all to get lucrative jobs. But people don't have to go to those lengths anymore.
No, and it you know, what I did 40-some-odd years ago is 4,000 times easier to do today, whether it was the check forgery side of it or the identity theft side of it. The technology and the too much information in the world makes it so easy. All the research and all the time I had to spend to do the things that I did are done now on your laptop in a matter of a few minutes. So certainly the world has changed a lot in that way, and it is a lot easier to do. And of course, the other thing that's unfortunate is I did those things and got sentenced to prison for 12 years. Today, if you do these things, the chance of going to jail is pretty slim, unfortunately. So the risks are great, the rewards are great, and the risks are very little. And consequently, that's another reason we have such a huge problem today.
Do you look anything like Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, not at all. I wish I did.
To pose as people educated in the professions, it was evil, as you acknowledge, but it must have taken guts. How much were you just in it for the money, and how much for the thrill of the game?
It was more of, I did all of those things from the age of 16 to the age of 21. So I was a teenager who ran away from home. Some kids got into drugs and Haight-Ashbury and the hippie scene. I ended up starting to do that more as a means of survival because I knew that no one would give a 16-year-old a job. I was a runaway from a broken home. So basically, I started posing as these people so that I could make a living and support myself. But then as it went along, it became more of a game as a teenager wrapped up in the authorities chasing him and all the things I was doing. But ultimately, I was caught, and ultimately, I spent 5 years of my life in prison. And I was very fortunate that when I was 26, the government took me out of prison, and I've worked with the Bureau now for 34 years, so I've had a great career after that, and I was very fortunate to live in a great country where you get a second chance.
Barb in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barb.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
I'm basically calling because I took my hard drive to be recovered at a computer support store. They recovered the hard drive, and then they gave it out to someone else. They gave it out to some other customer that walked in.
What do you mean? They gave away your hard drive or a copy of the information on your hard drive?
They recovered the information from my hard drive, burned it onto another hard drive, and gave it out to someone else.
By accident?
They said they gave it to another customer.
By accident?
I don't know if it was by accident or not. That's what they claim.
So what's your question?
My question is, what can I do about that? Is there anything I can do legally about that?
Well, I would be very concerned about that, and I would hope to God that was an accident. But either way, someone, you know, has that information. Now, whether they'll use it in a negative way or not do anything with it, but to be sure that I didn't have a problem, this is where you want to, you know, subscribe to a credit monitoring service so that somebody is monitoring your credit 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and can notify you if anyone is attempting to use your name, your Social Security number, your date of birth, a credit card you might have. That's really all you can do, and that's all I personally do, and that's all you can do, and hope that somebody is not going to take that information and use it to get credit in your name or apply for a job in your name or access your bank account or those kind of things.
Right. There's just another level to it is with that. When I the other information I had that is I'm applying for a green card or I was applying for a green card, so I had scans of my Canadian passport and a whole lot of information in terms of identity, that kind of identity. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, I would be, you know, I'd be obviously be very concerned about all of that information. But again, you know, to be realistic, maybe unless it was something intentional and someone paid somebody there at that store to buy that information, let's just take, for example, that it was in fact just a mistake. Probably someone who had that would just get rid of that information. I don't think there's a real likely chance they're going to take it and go steal your identity with it, but there is always that chance. So that's all you can do at this point is and you can notify the Canadian government that this occurred just in case they put an alert on your passport number and stuff like that in case something turns up, but that's about all you can do.
Good luck, Barb. You know, there's a thread of discussion that's broken out on our comments page around Social Security numbers. Chris, poster number 6, writes, a family member of mine works at Social Security, and she is adamant that there is no reason that anyone other than your employer and your creditors should have your Social Security number, period. But then Jen, poster number 8, replies, so you can refuse to give certain info, such as Social Security number, to a storage facility or a gym. But Chris replies, if you try to withhold your Social Security number, you often can't get services. For example, the gas and electric company, I think they do this so they can find out if you duck out on the bill. What about the Social Security number as being particularly vulnerable to identity theft, and do you have to give it out?
No, you do not have to give it out. The law is extremely explicit about that. Basically, just that you need to give it to a financial institution if you're applying for a loan. You need to make it available if you're attempting to get credit, such, and this is why gas and utility companies, you're asking them to give you credit on to provide you with gas or electric, and so they're using your credit card to really actually run a credit report. And you're required to give it to any government, municipality, state, county, agency that request it, but you are not required to give it to anybody else, and so you shouldn't. You have to be very aggressive and just say, I'm not going to do that. And if they insist that you give them, you know, to be very honest with you, I just give them a number because they're not going to do anything with that number, and there's no reason they need to have it. So if they insist, give me the number, just give them any number because they don't really need to have that. They're just taking that more out of habit because someone told them to do it. That's the way they've always done it. You know, I grew up in New York, and when I was a kid, you didn't even get a Social Security number until you got your first job. And then only you, your employer, and the government knew it. Now today, when your child's born, they give them a Social Security number, and these numbers are everywhere for people to sell or get access to.
What about some of the other products out there? We talked about LifeLock and Privacy Guard, but some of the other things that claim they help protect your identity from being stolen, like insurance against it, or even those gel pens. Now,
okay, the gel pens are wonderful. That's called the Uniball 207. This is great for people who write checks because check washing is a very popular crime now, actually second to identity theft. So they steal a check out of your mailbox, they put a scotch tape over your signature, then they wash off what you wrote with using any of 21 household chemicals, and then they rewrite the check. It has your real signature on it, and they go and deposit it, and they get the funds. So this $2 pen is sold everywhere, and if you write your checks with that, it uses a pigment ink, so you can't change it, you can't alter it, and you can't use it. And as far as these insurance? No. You know, all these companies provide you this insurance, but you need to be very clear and understand that there is no company that exists in the United States today, or the world for that matter, that if you were a victim of identity theft, they would reimburse you the money you lost from that theft. What those insurance companies are saying is, if you're out of work for a couple of days, you have to write some letters, you have to hire a little legal counsel or something, they insure you up to that amount. They are not going to give you the money back that was stolen. They're only giving you the money back to fix your credit. That's all it does, which is not a bad thing, but as long as you understand that if someone got in your bank account and stole $25,000 because they stole your identity, they're not going to give you $25,000 back. There is no such insurance.
Now, it's a coincidence, but I see that John Solomon has just walked into the studio wearing his green hard hat once again, and we're going to finish up our series for Thursdays in the month of April in about 10 minutes on personal security of a different kind, and that is preparing for emergencies. So I guess we're all about personal security this hour here on the Brian Lehrer Show, though it is a sheer coincidence that John and Frank Abagnale got scheduled back to back. My guest, Frank Abagnale, talking about identity theft in advance of this Sunday's Shred Fest NYC with locations in all five boroughs. You can go to our webpage at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show for the link to where the mobile shredders would be in your borough. And George on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Mr. Abagnale. I've had the pleasure of meeting you once before. I wanted to ask you a quick question and then also mention something about what the banks use as a method of trying to figure these frauds out, because I have had it happen many times, unfortunately, because I have lots of accounts, but my banks have caught them every single time, and I've been very pleased with the work that they've been doing on their side. With regard to the question I have for you is, I know what you look like, having met you a couple of times. It is my understanding that you were actually in the film, Catch Me If You Can, and that you were supposed to be in the scene, I think, working either in a bakery or a cafe or something. And I'll be damned if I saw you there. Did they edit you out, or were you really in it?
No, I'm in it. I'm in the towards the very end of the movie where Leo comes out of the print shop where he's been arrested by Tom Hanks, and I'm the French police inspector who walks up to him and takes him into custody and puts him in the car.
Very well. The issue is that I have probably an incidence of insider fraud where someone, realizing that I had electronic banking, decided to take out money, but a month or two, let's say 5 or 6 days or a week or two ahead of anything that I would have noticed on my computer looking at it. But because it would have taken 5 days to clear, and the bank realized that my pattern of using my account was such that I would not allow that kind of float on my account. In other words, I would not have the money deducted from my account to pay a bill 5 days later. They realized something was wrong, called me instantly. It led to a big mess because I had to change all my accounts, but they caught it.
Right.
I've had repeated patterns where people somehow have gotten a hold of a number, or they've guessed right or whatever, because I have very careful control of my card, signature, etc. But somehow people get the numbers. Could be random, could be some other way. And as soon as they've seen any action that looks a little odd, they call me. And the maximum I think a bank has lost in anything involving mine is probably $100, $150, no more than that. And most stuff is shut down right away. It means the hassle of changing the accounts.
Mm-hmm. George, I'm going to leave it there. But what's the lesson in George's story, Frank?
Well, the thing is that, you know, people should understand that banks across the United States have done a wonderful job. They have literally spent millions upon millions of dollars to develop the artificial intelligence programs and technology so that if you use your credit card, then they kind of map how you use your credit card. And if all of a sudden you go out and rent a Learjet, that raises suspicion, and so they're going to call you and ask you, are you actually making this purchase or did you do this? And they do that with your checking account. They monitor how you write checks. And if all of a sudden you're missing it, you go from check number 1096 to 3086. If you write a large check, that's going to be out of your pattern, so they're going to call and check with you. And, you know, banks have brought positive pay to the commercial check market. They're doing a lot to fight fraud, but there's always going to be fraud, and there's always going to be people trying to find ways to manipulate it or get around it. So all it is a constant battle, and as a consumer, you just have to be out there being smart and keeping up to date with what's going on, and shows like yours help people do that, help people get information they need to have.
Now, as kind of a tangent to your own story, someone writes, this is comment 45 if you're on our board, Frank, it is wonderful that you had a chance to turn your life around and make good use of your talent. Do you have an opinion of the extensive background checks that keep potential employees out of jobs if they have a prison record, drug record, or even suspicion of activity?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you've committed a crime, it goes against, I had an incident where I was stopped in a U-Haul trip moving one of my sons to law school a couple of years ago in Illinois, and I spent 2 hours out on the highway because the guy ran my record and found I had all these records, and he got very suspicious that I was hauling counterfeit plates or counterfeit money until I could assure him that I wasn't doing that and who I was. So your record never goes away, unfortunately, and I think people don't understand that. If you commit a crime, it's going to go on your record. It's going to be there for the rest of your life. It will come back to hinder you, and there are going to be employers who are willing to overlook it and give you a second chance, and there are going to be people, unfortunately, that are not going to do that. But yes, once it's on your record and a background check, it's going to come up, and a police stop you, it's going to come up. It never goes away, unfortunately.
Here is Nancy in Manhattan with a story of the failure of a credit watching company. Is that right, Nancy?
Well, yes. It was small potatoes, sort of, but I was using a credit watch program through Discover Card, and at first I was using all three, but I wanted to save some money, and so I cut back to just Equifax, which is a major one. And they said they would do that for a smaller amount a month, and that was going fine. I'd get reports every once in a while. And then 1 month, I got billed on a credit card that was in my drawer that I never use. And my first thought was, why wasn't I informed about this? It was, less than $100, $120, something like that, McDonald's here and there, small things. But it was a card, first of all, that I hadn't used in a long time, and I wondered two things: why the credit card company didn't call me because of sudden activity, not even in my borough, and two, why was I not informed? And so I called the credit watch company, and they basically told me that wasn't something that they were going to watch.
That's correct. The credit watch company wasn't at fault. They only monitor your credit, so someone would have had to apply for credit in your name or applied for a job in your name using your Social Security number, your date of birth. The credit card company would have been the one that would have called, and they don't all do that. But yes, you would think that they would have called you since the card had very little activity and then there was a charge on it. But if it wasn't a very large charge, I can see why they probably didn't call. But that wouldn't have been – the credit monitoring service only monitors your credit. So they don't monitor charges you make or charges against your credit card or anything of that nature. So they probably, the Equifax side of it, wouldn't have caught that, but the credit card company, may or may not have had their procedures set up to catch something like that for a smaller amount.
Good luck, Nancy. How about freecreditreport.com? They advertise so much, a lot of people know it. We're getting a question about it. Do you have an opinion?
I don't like giving away a lot of my information. Yesterday we had an event in the media with the Lending Tree. They found out that their employees, where people would give them all their credit information so the Lending Tree could go out and find them the best mortgage, the employees were selling that to other mortgage companies and to other individuals, that their personal information, millions of accounts. So to me, I'm very leery about just putting my information out there like that. So when something's free but they want my personal information to put in there, I'm a little concerned because I don't know what their internal controls are. I don't know how well they keep that information or whether their employees are bonded or whether they do background checks on their employees. So I'd be very, very careful about who you give your information to.
I know you got to go to this news conference on the Shredfest in just a minute. Let me read you a story of a con artist in New York and ask you as the last thing if you think that there are common cons out there where people try to get your identity. This is not an identity theft case, but this is on Gothamist today about somebody who had his bicycle stolen. And talking about the thief, the victim writes, "He walked by me, then turned around and came back. He walked up to me and asked where he could get a bike like mine. Then he asked if he could feel how heavy it was. I knew he was going to want to try it out, and I knew I would say no. Then for some dumbass reason, I gave in and I let him ride it. And sure enough, the guy rode away with his bike."
That's based on, unfortunately, an old scam. I mean, that's the same scam as I come up to you and you're sitting out there with your wife and you're getting ready to take a picture of her by a New York statue, and I come over and say, "Look, can I take that picture picture for you, the both together, and you go, oh, would that be so kind of you? And I take the camera and I have you walk over by the statue, and then I take off with the camera. So unfortunately, we live in a world of millions of scams, and if you make it easy for someone to steal from you, it's unfortunate. So
and any one to watch out for that's an identity theft con?
Be very careful of people who are calling you on telephones or sending you emails, which we call phishing, where they're asking you for information. They say they're from the Internal Revenue Service. You want a sweepstakes, but you need to provide them with information so they can send you the check from the sweepstakes. They're going to buy something from you on eBay, but they send you more money than what the actual price is and tell you to send them back the difference. All of those things that seem real too good to be true or something suspicious about them, you need to check them out. Just be a little careful, put a little thought into it, and you can protect yourself a great deal.
Frank Abagnale, once on the wrong side of the law with respect to identity theft, long on the right side of it, and helping to promote Shredfest NYC around the five boroughs this weekend. Thanks so much for spending all this time with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being on.
Really helpful. Boy, are people interested in this. So many comments on our webpage, people's stories, people's questions. Usually we get this many comments when we talk about the Israelis versus the Palestinians or Clinton versus Obama. But identity theft, obviously a big, big thing. And we have a link on the page to all the sites around New York City where you can take advantage of Shredfest NYC. This Sunday, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And coming up in a minute, Personal Security Part 2 with John Solomon.